It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Amid the historic heat wave gripping the southwestern parts of the nation, Wisconsin's climatologist tells WPR that our state and the upper Midwest have been spared from the extreme heat. But for how long? As we discuss climate tipping points, call in with a question, your comment along the way, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Allegra LeGrand is a climate scientist with the NASA Goddard Institute for Space Studies and an adjunct research scientist at Columbia University's Center for Climate Systems Research. Allegra, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, it's easy to tick off more extreme weather, the record-breaking heat I mentioned in the Southwest, the flash floods in Vermont, the wildfire smoke made our air unhealthy around the country and here in Wisconsin. How much can climate change be blamed for these extremes?
For a long time, climate scientists were really hesitant to attribute any single event to climate change because climate scientists are by and large a pretty cautious bunch. But as we continue to progress with, you know, ever more extreme heat waves, all the significant rainfalls that we've had this summer, and those wildfires, which have been affecting me in New York, just as they have you guys out in Wisconsin. I think climate scientists now are pretty comfortable saying, like, we wouldn't be having these kinds of extremes if we did not have climate change. So I think that it's safe to say now that, yeah, we are experiencing and living in a world where climate change is often part of everyone's daily experience.
Given that, as you research climate extremes each day, are the extremes this year alarming or expected?
Well, I think they're both because, you know, the climate projections, I work in a climate modeling group, and what we like to do is we have scenarios for what society is going to do for the next 100 years. And then we take these scenarios and put it into a massive computer simulation, a climate model. And those models have been telling us to expect like much warmer temperatures. And of course, when you have warmer temperatures, the air can hold more water. So expect more extreme rainfall. So it's alarming that we're actually experiencing it, but it is something that was predicted by the climate models. It's not something that we wanted to happen. It was something we had collectively hoped to avoid, but it's definitely here with us now.
So the extremes we're observing now would expect to worsen in your modeling as we continue to rely so heavily on fossil fuels and emit greenhouse gases.
That's right. And so something that's important, the scenarios that we have a lot of scenarios for how society is going to evolve over the next century. Will we continue to build, to consume fossil fuels at the same pace we are today? Will we accelerate, or will we pull back and change over to other kinds of technologies where we're no longer putting so much carbon up in the atmosphere? And those will have a real meaningful impact on the climate that we experience in the next decade and even the next 100 years.
Do your systems, and what you see, does that mean that we have to adapt much faster to our changing planet that's getting hotter? Do we need to catch up here to our planet?
So the pace of adaptation, it kind of depends on us. I mean, when my boss, Jim Hansen, well, he's retired now, but my boss, Jim Hansen, went in the 1980s to testify in front of Congress. If we had taken action then, we would have had pretty modest changes that we needed to make year by year. Hmm. But we really haven't stopped emitting fossil fuels in that intervening 30 years. So now we need to make much more dramatic changes to have the same kind of impact in keeping our climate the way we have been accustomed to it being. It's all about what we're going to have to change. Either we're going to have to change and deal with extreme heats, extreme rainfall, fires, or we're going to have to change and not emit so many fossil fuels.
we're talking about whether the world might be closer to reaching climate collapse and tipping points. Allegra LeGrand is with us, climate scientist affiliated with NASA and Columbia University. You can join in the conversation with your question or comment at 800-642-1234. Allegra, the term climate collapse, we're seeing it more in headlines and news articles. What do you make of climate collapse?
So, you know, I think this last couple of weeks we've seen collapse coming up because there are scientists who are concerned about a particular kind of circulation that goes on in the Atlantic Ocean. And in the Atlantic, there are two kinds of circulation, a wind-driven surface current system and then a deeper current system. And that deeper current system is vulnerable right now because it relies on salty, dense water being produced at the surface. And when you melt ice sheets, you interrupt this deep water formation. It's also called Atlantic meridional overturning circulation. Sometimes you hear it, North Atlantic deep water. And they're worried that this circulation pattern will collapse if we keep freshening the surface North Atlantic. We're freshening the surface North Atlantic because we're melting Greenland. I don't think it's productive to say that this is going to collapse, as it were. And every, you know, I've done hundreds of simulations over the years and seen hundreds more. The circulation can stop and it can be reduced, but it always comes back on if you alleviate the forcing. So I think it's important to remember that we haven't gone over the edge. We are in control of our own futures, and that control is about reducing our greenhouse gas emissions. So collapse or tipping points, I wouldn't say that so much as like we will hit milestones. Like, we never thought we'd see a temperature so hot. We never thought we'd see a rainfall so extreme. We may pass those milestones, but we can choose to walk that back through our actions. And the climate system will recover.
When you talk about these Atlantic circulation and these patterns for ocean circulation, it makes me wonder about El Nino and the warming of surface waters in the Pacific Ocean. What is El Nino contributing to what we're seeing now?
Sure. So in the Pacific Ocean, there's a natural circulation, and it's controlled by the eastern equatorial trade winds. Sometimes those trade winds blow really hard. And when they do, the hot pot of water that normally sits off the coast of the Americas is shifted more towards the central Pacific, and cooler waters come up from below. That means that the atmosphere is seeing like this huge belt of cool water in the eastern Pacific. And that has an impact on global temperature patterns, really. What El Nino is those winds get weak. And so that hot pot of water shifts back towards the American coast. And so instead of seeing the surface of cool water, the Pacific has this surface of really warm water. And warm water, of course, it likes to evaporate. And we find that there's correlations or teleconnections between those warmer temperatures in the surface Pacific and places all around the world. And in general, we can have global climate increase by a few tenths of a degree Celsius when we are in a strong El Nino situation. Depending on where you are, if you're somewhere very close to the equatorial Pacific, it could be a temperature shift that is even greater. So right now, like, we are already on the cusp of being like the hottest year ever because of our greenhouse gases. And year to year, a lot of what controls if this is the number one hottest year or the number five hottest year has to do with whether or not we're in a positive El Nino. This year we're coming into a positive El Nino, and it seems very likely that this year we'll hit that hottest year ever mark. And certainly this last month, with the whole globe having record high temperatures, it seems like we're on pace to make that.
Allegra LeGrand, scientist with the NASA Goddard Institute for Space Studies, helping us to discern changes in climate becoming bigger, more noticeable, risks that we could reach points of no return. Join in with a question, a comment at any point during this discussion on climate. Call 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. With a summer of extreme weather records, we explore climate tipping points and what triggers could lead to irreversible climate impacts. Be part of the conversation. Call in with a question, a comment along the way, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Allegra LeGrand is a physical research scientist with the NASA Goddard Institute for Space Studies and stays with us. Allegra, we heard from Vern in Eau Claire County, called in and says in 2021, there was this powerful volcanic eruption in the southern Pacific Ocean, the Tonga eruption. And Vern says that eruption released an estimated 55 million tons of water vapor into the stratosphere and is having an effect on weather and climate. Can you speak to that eruption and its impact?
Sure. So he's talking about the Hunga Tonga eruption. And it was truly something larger than we really we've seen in our satellite era. It released so much water into the stratosphere. Now, the stratosphere is the layer of the atmosphere above the troposphere. We live in the troposphere. It's where most of our weather happens. Stratosphere is very dry. It doesn't have much water. And this one volcano released an extra 10% of the global budget of water into the stratosphere. And people immediately were very concerned on what the impacts would be of this extra water vapor. Water vapor, of course, is a greenhouse gas. So scientists were worried, like, will this extra water vapor mean that we'll have an extra little kick of warming? Another impact of water vapor in the stratosphere is the chemistry up there is very complex, and it's normally water limited. So actually, extra water vapor can impact the amount of ozone. It can interact with the methane that's up there. The water dissociates into like H and OH. OH is kind of a scrubber. It interacts with all the different chemical constituents. And of course, like if you mess with ozone, you can have other profound impacts on climate. So scientists are taking two approaches right now. There are instrumental people looking at satellite observations. And then another group of scientists that I'm involved with, we have these things called model intercomparison projects. People have read, you know, the IPCC report. This is a model intercomparison project, all the projections there. We've convened a special one for Hunga Tonga, where we're going to coordinate doing this simulation across the various climate models and try to add up, you know, what component is it getting, is it contributing to additional warming, and or what component is it contributing to interrupting our stratospheric chemistry? So I don't think we have settled yet what the impact is of this eruption, but I can say that today, you know, even without that Hunga Tonga eruption, if we were moving into a positive El Nino, it's very likely that this year would still be like the hottest year, or we would still be seeing like these extreme records. So the volcano, it's not totally clear yet what its global impact is, but we're working on it. And it's not the only thing that's at hand here. Most of what's going on has to do with our carbon emissions.
Thank you for that explanation of that eruption. You know, as you talk about comparison and components, and scientists also talk about reaching a tipping point in climate change, what would it mean to reach one or more of these tipping points?
Well, again, I mean, I don't know, tipping points is the most productive way to think about things, but I mean, we can reach mile markers, which change the way that we live our lives. Mm. For instance, I have family that lives in Montreal, and they never had air conditioning, and they never really needed air conditioning, and they were very happy living there. But the last decade, Montreal's had summers where it's over 90 degrees for weeks on end. And they now need to have air conditioning, and so it's changed the way that they are able to live their lives, and it's demonstrably different than when they first moved there.
And they have that memory.
That's right. They have that memory, and it's very profound. And it could also be like, you know, the extreme flooding. Like when I moved to New York, we would have like really strong rainfalls here and again, but you know, this last decade, we have had some truly magnificent amounts of rain. And you know, we've talked about 2021. I mean, see, in 2021, we had three large storms that moved through New York, and the subways actually flooded. And that's just, it's not something New York was built for. And I think that the people who waded through those waters certainly weren't expecting that to happen, because it's not something that you really had experienced before. But it's something now, I guess, that we have had to adapt to and realize this is something that can actually happen. And, you know, maybe if you're a farmer, you know, you probably had a timeline when you would plant your crops, and you could reliably say, okay, this is when they were going to have the last frost, the first frost, and those dates shifting around. It's something that you probably have a memory of it changing and doing something different when you were a kid than now when you're an adult. So tipping points, I mean, we are hitting these mile markers. Some we can adapt to better than others. Some will be a challenge to adapt to.
Allegra LeGrand with us, climate scientist affiliated with NASA and Columbia University. As we look at climate extremes and how to interpret them, you can join in with your questions and comments at 800-642-1234. We hear from Jay in Park Falls, called in and wants to know, what is the latest update, Allegra, on melting permafrost? What can you tell us about melting permafrost?
Oh, geez. So melting permafrost, you know, when you go far enough north, you can get to regions where the ground is reliably frozen. And, you know, people have built up infrastructure for that. So roads to get around that depend on that permafrost being kind of a hard bedrock of sorts. And now as we get increasing amounts of warming temperatures and the amount of heat, global heating we have, it has been greater at higher latitudes, so in those permafrost regions often, than it is like in the mid-latitudes or lower latitudes. People worry about melting permafrost. It can create lakes. It can melt lakes. Methane is caught up in the permafrost layers. They worry about it releasing extra methane. You know, pathogens that froze 10,000 years ago, 20,000 years ago, we worry about those getting unfrozen and reintroduced into the climate system. And we worry also not just the permafrost, but, you know, we have mountain glaciers that are really important to people who rely on the slow melting of those glaciers through the year to for fresh water, and all these things happening at these Arctic bands getting warming can have a profound impact on climate, not just locally, but even globally.
You were talking about extreme rains where you are in New York. As you look at the near future, what can people here in the Midwest expect in terms of weather extremes?
So there's a really nice resource called the National Climate Assessment, which puts together regional forecasts of you know what you might expect happening in the Midwest in the future. In the Midwest, you might expect, like, maybe you're someplace and right now you hit 100 degrees one or two days a year. You might expect in the future you might hit 100 degrees several weeks of the year. You might expect that, as I touched on, the day that you get your last snow or the frost, you can reliably count on there being less frost. Those days will shift around, but you also have shifting baseline temperature conditions. So where things like to live will be shifting further north. Ecosystems can be dynamic. Sometimes they can adapt, but if the pace of climate system is too fast, then we can outpace that adaptation. Something else I touched on is the disease pathogens. I know like in New York, we have Lyme disease and we have the tick-borne diseases.
Same here. Yep.
These tick-borne diseases, you know, there is an interplay between how widespread they are and the climate we're in. So you might expect to see an expansion of the range of places that you could go to get, I mean, we have Lyme disease, of course, but there's several others that are some of them are quite scary, but you could expect those to expand their range as well.
So lots of ramifications. Allegra, thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much.
Allegra LeGrand is a climate scientist, works with the NASA Goddard Institute for Space Studies and Columbia University's Center for Climate Systems Research. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.